KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Battlefield Earth recently won the Razzie for being the worst picture of the decade. Today, the two credited screenwriters on that film say, don't blame us. We find out how they survived writing one of the most notorious movies ever. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stay close. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by our executive producer, Matt Holzman. Hello, Matt.
Hello there, Kim.
So, Matt, you know you can download a podcast of The Business for free on iTunes.
I know. What a deal.
What a deal. But for only 99 cents, you will soon be able to download TV shows, not from all the studios that make TV shows, but from two big ones, Disney or ABC and Fox.
Right. You'll be able to download shows for 99 cents an episode, which is a very significant discount, considering that even I Dream of Jeannie is going for $1.99 right now. TV shows go for as much as, I think, $3.99 an episode. So, and why?
Why? Well, why in the case of Disney? Because Steve Jobs, of Apple, is the biggest shareholder in Disney. And whither he goest, there goes Disney. And they will do what he wishes. In the case of Fox, it's a little different. All the other studios are bitterly opposed to this. They think this is a very bad idea. They feel that this will draw people away from watching, you know, TV and hurt their sales of DVD, you know, collected episodes, which are very lucrative. And they are deeply concerned and denouncing this. But Fox has another agenda, which is that Rupert Murdoch, who is, of course, the chairman of News Corp, the parent company, has a little paper called The Wall Street Journal. And the thinking is that he is currying favor with Apple to get his newspaper, which is a big challenge to make a newspaper profitable now, favorable treatment on the various Apple devices. And therefore, it's not a permanent deal. It's supposed to be an experiment. Apple has promised to pay everybody what they would have made if full prices had been charged for this experimental period. But many people in the industry feel that this is the beginning of something very bad for the TV industry.
Right. Rupert Murdoch believes specifically that the iPad is going to be the future of the newspaper publishing business. And he really wants to be a first mover there. And of course, the studios are right. If this succeeds, it will hurt their DVD sales, and it could potentially hurt TV viewership. But I think what they're not facing is, like with the music industry, DVD sales are going to disappear no matter what. So why not embrace the future?
But the question of the pricing is going to be a very sensitive one. And, you know, these TV shows that people enjoy cost a whole lot of money to make, sometimes, you know, in excess of $1 million an episode, and you're not going to pay for them with 99-cent downloads. So
right.
That's the concern.
And the other concern, of course, is that they're negotiating with cable companies for carriage, and if these programs are worth so little, it takes away their leverage in negotiations with the cable companies.
They want the cable companies to pay them.
Right.
This is in case of the broadcast networks, and it hurts them if they say, oh, by the way, we're selling this stuff cheap. So that's going to be an ongoing struggle. I mean, this did not help CD sales when they did it for music, and I think the studios are concerned that it will not help them either.
Well, I'm sure of that.
So we going from to the legislative side of the business, a new paparazzi law, either awaiting signature or possibly signed in California by the time we broadcast the show?
Right. At the time of this taping, there's a new piece of legislation on Governor Schwarzenegger's desk that will impose strict new penalties on photographers who break traffic laws in the pursuit of a celebrity photo. It could be up to $5,000 fine and a year in prison. That's in addition to a law that he passed or signed last year that talked about, you know, invading the privacy space of celebrities. The previous law didn't seem to change paparazzi's behavior, and the new one in all likelihood, will not change behavior either. It's worth noting they're passing or trying to pass this law on the anniversary of the death of Diana, allegedly because she was being pursued by paparazzi. You know, in L.A., it seems to me most of the paparazzi are standing on the side of the street outside of clubs, and it's really not a car paparazzi culture, but I guess we'll see.
Well, and you always say, well, okay, some of these people are actually sort of, luring the paparazzi. In the case of Diana, I have to say, she did have a drunk driver in the car, which may have had something to do with the problem.
Right.
But, it's always a question, do we feel sorry for the celebrities who seek fame? Do we feel sorry for the paparazzi trying to make a buck? Do we feel sorry for anybody in this scenario?
Well, and again, Diana is a bad analogy because a lot of the celebrities curry favor with the paparazzi because they are, in fact, part of their celebrity.
She was one of them. She did it, too. She wasn't immune from that. It's interesting that the legislature can get it together to protect our celebrities. They can't ban plastic bags at the grocery store, but this they can do.
Right.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Matt Holtzman, our executive producer. The movie Battlefield Earth was adapted from the sci-fi novel by Scientology founder L. Ron Hubbard. John Travolta played a 9-foot alien with dreadlocks and a rather striking codpiece.
When we attacked your planet, all your soldiers and all their advanced technology, you only put up a measly...
Roger Ebert wrote that Battlefield Earth was not merely bad, it's unpleasant in a hostile way. And Jon Stewart described it as a cross between Star Wars and the smell of ass. When the movie came out in 2000, it was the big winner at the Razzies, the award show that honors the worst in cinema with a spray-painted raspberry trophy. Rarely do the honorees actually show up to accept the award, but when Battlefield Earth recently won for being the worst picture of the decade, screenwriter J.D. Shapiro showed up and gave an acceptance speech, or call it a plea for forgiveness. Following that, he made another public apology in the New York Post entitled, "I penned the suckiest movie ever. Sorry." I sat down with J.D. Shapiro to talk about surviving this misadventure in the screen trade. We originally recorded and broadcast today's interviews in April of this year. So tell us, how did you get the gig to write Battlefield Earth?
Battlefield Earth came about when I went to a party and I ran into an ex-girlfriend introduced me to her sister. And her sister started talking to me about Celebrity Center and Scientology. And I said I wouldn't be a member of any club that would have me, which is the old Groucho Marx line.
Right.
And a few months later, I read an article in Premiere Magazine. And in the article, it was pretty much trashing Scientology, but it did say that Celebrity Center was a great place to meet women and get laid.
So I feel moved by a spiritual quest.
Exactly, which is, the most honest spiritual quest there is, I guess. So
okay.
I went down there. I was a little bit nervous because everyone was in uniform. Not everyone, but a lot of people were in uniform. Sea Org members wear uniforms, which...
Sea Org being their sort of administrative and management entity.
Yeah, those are the people who signed the billion-year contract.
The billion-year contract, right.
So I had lunch there, and the president, a woman named Karen Hollander, who was always very nice to me, wanted to meet me. I walked into her private office, which was guarded, and so we ended up talking for about 2 hours. We had different views on religion, but we hit it off.
She was okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, she laughed and, went into what their theories are. And
were you established as a screenwriter at that point?
Yeah, I mean, Men in Tights. I'd recently just sold something to Disney called Signed, Sealed, and Delivered.
Enough to be convincing.
Enough for them to at least.
Right, enough to be convinced them, okay.
So she said, Ron wrote a lot of Pulp Fiction, and, I figured we never know if life take the opportunity. So I met with people at Arthur Services, which is their book division, and they pitched me a bunch of books, and two of them were called Typewriter in the Sky, and the other one was called Fear. And I read them, and I thought Fear would make a really good movie. And they said, Travolta's been wanting to try and do that movie. Would you like to meet him? Sure, why not? So John and I meet, and he actually grew up in the same town I grew up in. So I went, Englewood. So we kind of hit it off. He liked my take on it a lot. So the first project was actually Fear. In the middle of Fear, I got a phone call from one of John's people saying he's interested in you doing Battlefield Earth. It's a pet project of his. So I said, all right, send the book. And they were funny because they were like, don't you just want to do it? I'm like, well, let me read the book first. But you love sci-fi. Yeah, I know, but let me read the book. So read the book, liked a lot of aspects of it that I thought could make a movie. So I ended up coming up with my take, meeting with Mike Marcus, who was at that time the president of MGM.
Right.
In the room, he said, I made a deal with myself that I would never make a snap decision. I like it a lot. I'll let you know in the morning. And in the morning, I found out that they wanted to proceed, with making a deal.
And again, to you, this was just a sci-fi movie.
At this point, I felt comfortable that I was writing a sci-fi.
Did you believe this was going to be the movie to catapult you, that this was a career-making film at some point?
Well, I always looked, Robin Hood, Men in Tights was prior to that, so that was a, substantial career boost for me.
Right.
I looked at it as a way of actually, what I mostly looked at it as people wouldn't just look at me as doing comedies. They would now see that I can do other things besides comedies.
I don't want to get too into the Scientology of it all, but you did at one point do the Purification Rundown, which as I understand it is like sauna plus vitamins and minerals or something.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure I wasn't sending out some weird subliminal message like kill the Jews or something like that. So I felt comfortable at that point. And the Purif was actually the Purif was
I hear you get very itchy from
the niacin. Yeah.
Yeah.
You take niacin, you take vitamins, you run, and then you go in and out of a sauna. And I actually was doing it with Smokey Robinson.
Oh, God.
So it was.
Sorry. I don't know if I'm going to get through this interview, but do go on.
So Smokey and I would hang out in the sauna, and he taught me how to play Uno. And then when he left, you're supposed to hit a point where you know you're done. So I said, I'm done. He was like, you're not done. I left. And they called up and said, oh, please come back. And I said, I'm done. And then of course, they got me there the same way they did in the beginning. They said, oh, there happens to be a very attractive woman.
They did not.
Yes, they did.
Oh, come on.
Who happens to be doing the Purif now, and we think you guys would get along.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with screenwriter J.D. Shapiro, whose credits include Robin Hood, Men in Tights, the indie film We Married Margot, and the inadvertently tragic Battlefield Earth. Shapiro has recently publicly apologized for writing that movie. He got the gig when Scientologist John Travolta asked him to adapt the L. Ron Hubbard book of the same name, Hubbard, of course, being the founder of Scientology. Shapiro wrote a script that he thought was pretty good, and it seemed to be well-received at MGM, too.
And then I got a bunch of notes from MGM, and I read the notes, and I was like, and I really thought it was a joke at first, because they changed everything.
Still no director attached.
No director attached. Mm-hmm. At that point, John had attached himself as Johnny Goodboy Tyler, and MGM was talking about spending $100, $110 million to make the movie.
So where are these notes coming from if it's perfect?
Well, at that point, that's what I said to Mike. I called up Mike, and I said, where are these notes coming from? And they said, they're coming from us. And I said, Mike, you've had some bad notes, but nothing compares to this. And he said, well, they're from John's camp.
Aha.
So the notes were coming from John's camp.
Yes.
And I said, well, John's camp is the Church of Scientology, and not for nothing, if they were great notes, fine, but these notes will kill the movie.
What was the gist of the notes?
It was losing main characters. It was a lot of the stuff that I created within the script was being lost. The tone of the movie was changing. Based on the notes, it felt like it was becoming, I thought it was going to become a little more comical than edgy.
Did it feel that it was now conveying the message of the church and that was the gist of what they wanted to do?
No. It just felt it was really going to be a really, really bad movie.
They just were fooling around when they didn't know what they were doing, in your opinion.
Well, I heard two rumors. The one that one of John's people told me and someone else told me at the church was that L. Ron Hubbard had written a significant amount of notes on what he wanted the movie to be like.
They hadn't bothered to tell you about.
I had never seen any of these notes. So the second one was that there was an actual script.
That he had written.
That he had written. But that one, I heard it from one person and no one else backed it up. I said to Mike, I'm not going to do these notes. I believe I had two more steps. as a writer, you
get paid
up front.
You get paid in increments, right.
Right. So there were certain steps that I still had. I believe I still had a rewrite and a polish. And at that point, I said, we can do the dance. There's about 10% of these notes that will work, and I'll incorporate. The rest I won't. Or you can fire me now. And a few days later, they fired me.
Oh, so you, at that point, you're out of the picture, and yet your name stays on the picture. How's that?
I wanted to use my pseudonym. And my pseudonym was registered with Roger Guild. I had two. You registered two. But one of them was Sir Nick Knack, or Sir Nicholas Knack.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to use that. And I was told that because I got – if you get paid over a certain amount of money, you're not allowed to use your pseudonym because apparently you have name value to the movie. And both my attorney and my agent talked me into leaving it on. They're like, people in town know your draft. So, you know, don't worry about it.
So they felt that the strength of your draft's reputation was sufficient.
They felt, yeah, and that my draft had got John to sign on as Johnny Goodboy Tyler. And also there was a substantial amount of money involved. And in my mind, I think it's the one time I sold out because I think the money definitely helped influence whether or not I just took my name off it completely.
So when you went to see it,
yeah.
How is that?
Well, let's see. When I walked down the red carpet and people asked me questions, it was I would say, oh, well, you got to ask Corey Mandel that because I can't take credit for any of it. Because I'd read the draft. Actually, there's a morbid curiosity going on is it as bad as I think it's going to be? And unfortunately, I was right about 12 seconds in. They're the first Dutch tilt in slow motion of it. I was like, oh my God, this is awful.
So did you walk around the town and people give you like endless grief or were people polite?
I went into television.
You literally did, yes. Because of this?
Yeah.
I mean, you're literally saying you went into television. Did it help you and hurt you in television? Did it follow you?
Actually, We Married Margot created enough of a buzz, and I actually did do some film work, but I also at the time made an overall deal with Spelling. So Margot actually helped balance things out to a certain point. You still have, you know, I mean, at parties, business is done at cocktail parties, and no one at a cocktail party wants to be going, hey, who's doing your next movie? Say, oh, the guy who wrote Battlefield.
Well, let me just come back for a second to your apparently the person that you haven't met, Corey. You haven't met Corey Mandel.
I have never met Corey.
But you obviously you have totally dumped this at his feet publicly at this point. Do you worry that people will think you're just making excuses? Or
I did get the ball rolling. I did write the draft.
You do have some claim.
I have some ownership here. I have to take responsibility because I'm the one that got the whole thing started.
Hopefully. I mean, at this point, does it have an impact?
I use it. Well, I started doing stand-up comedy a few years ago, so I get to use it in my comedy, and that seems to go over well. As far as career-wise, I can't say it helps, but I don't think it hurts anymore.
J.D. Shapiro has apologized publicly and very humorously for his part in writing Battlefield Earth. But he also says, hey, I got fired off this project. In fact, when he accepted the Razzie for the worst film of the decade, he said he wanted to thank screenwriter Corey Mandel for rewriting his script, quote, in a way that I could never, ever, ever have imagined or conceived of myself. So is Corey Mandel, the only other credited screenwriter on Battlefield Earth, the one who really should be apologizing? Corey Mandel says, not so fast.
I think he's trying to distance himself from the movie, which is an understandable survival instinct. My only concern is, as a writer, you should be careful when you throw another writer under the bus. He wrote a script that he really believed in, and then he was given a series of notes that he did not want to do. Maybe it should occur to him that maybe this Corey Mandel guy had a similar experience where he wrote a script that he believed in and maybe got the same set of notes for all. I mean, I didn't see his notes, but it's possible. I would never criticize another writer because you don't know what they went through and you don't know what notes or what they were forced to do. You just don't know.
So who's responsible at this point?
I think there were people who worked on the project after me who never officially submitted it because it wasn't at a studio. When you're at a studio, everything gets submitted to the studio. John Travolta had two people. I think they were a couple, but I'm not sure. It was a male and a female who were Scientologists, and he introduced them as his private screenwriters. So I've assumed that they were involved, but I don't know that for a fact.
We don't have a clue who those people were.
I don't remember their names.
Okay. Coming up after a short break, we continue our talk with screenwriter Corey Mandel about surviving his credit on one of the worst movies ever, Battlefield Earth. This is The Business from KCRW. So who do you blame for Battlefield Earth? Or maybe you liked it. Let us know by writing us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. the Business, and I'm Kim Masters. When Battlefield Earth recently won the Razzie for Worst Picture of the Decade, screenwriter J.D. Shapiro took the opportunity to apologize publicly for having anything to do with the film. But he also made the point that, hey, he got fired off this thing. It really wasn't his fault. When Shapiro exited, Corey Mandel entered and became the only other credited writer on the movie. Mandel was making a nice living as a script polisher when Battlefield Earth entered his life. Having written lots of films that almost got made, he was desperate for a credit on something that would actually get made. And a movie that was John Travolta's pet project seemed like a reasonable bet. We originally recorded and broadcast today's interviews in April of this year. How did you get brought in to rewrite this movie?
My agent calls me, and he says there's a project at MGM that is an adaptation of L. Ron Hubbard's Battlefield Earth. John Travolta's attached to star. Take the meeting. John Travolta's a big star. It's good to know big stars. Whatever you do, don't take the project.
This was because?
I believe it's because the whole L. Ron Hubbard Scientology thing, and my agent smarter than me and saw this could be a train wreck.
Okay. So you go. What happens next?
Well, I go and take the meeting, and Travolta tells me, I know you're not a Scientologist, and that's why you're here. We had had a Scientologist write a draft. We weren't happy with it.
Oh, he told you that he had a Scientologist. Was this supposed to be J.D. Shapiro or another Scientologist? You didn't know.
He didn't name the person.
Okay. An unnamed Scientologist.
An unnamed Scientologist had done a draft. We're not happy with it. We want someone who's, you know, a writer of your caliber. I mean, one of my faults is if you flatter me enough, I'll do anything. And, you know, they really played in my ego, and it worked.
It's the Hollywood way, right?
I left that meeting. I didn't say yes. I didn't say no. My agent's telling me say no. My wife's telling me to say no. My dog's telling me to say no. MGM decided not to do the project. And Fox 2000 jumped in, Laura Ziskin's company. And they wanted to have a meeting to hear my take. And Fox 2000, you know, they have a reputation of only doing really classy, great movies.
Obviously, she is the subsequently became the producer of Spider-Man, and she had done other high-quality films. And
right. So I'm thinking if Laura Ziskin and Fox 2000 wants, they're not concerned about the Scientology angle. And if it gets weird on the Scientology front, they're going to have my back. So I went in and pitched to Laura Ziskin and John Travolta my approach to the story, which was very different from the source material. They both said, great, and they hired me.
Now, did you see the script? Is the script that you saw, do you know, was it the draft that J.D. Shapiro had written?
I did see that draft.
And that was the one you worked off of, or was there yet another version?
I was basically told to read it and then not use anything that was in it.
Okay. So you were starting with the book?
No, I basically came up with a take that was an original take that used elements of the book, but it was completely different.
Okay. So you come up with that take, and it falls out at Fox 2000 as well, right?
Well, right before I finish the draft, everything goes bad. It falls out of Fox 2000, and it goes to Franchise Films, which I know is not good.
That's the production company that was Ely Samaha, who was a guy who was subsequently sued to Kingdom Come. We'll leave it at that.
Yes. And we go from a big-budget Fox movie to who knows how much money they have. Worse, I'm told that John Travolta has decided he's no longer going to play the main character. He's going to play the 9-foot space alien, which always seemed like curious casting to me.
The villain, the bad guy.
And I'm given a series of notes, which basically they want me to remove everything from my script that's not in the source material, which is basically removing almost my entire script.
And do you know the source, the provenance of these notes?
You
have
first of all, let me say this. John Travolta, through this experience, treated me great. I always found him to be very intelligent and just a very nice person.
Right.
That said, I believe that when it was at Fox 2000, his creative forces were counterweighted by the studio. I think at this point, him or his people, his advisors, are now the creative force of this universe. You know, having done a lot of studio projects, it's not uncommon to write a draft you really believe in, turn it in, and get notes that you don't always believe in, and then there's a negotiation, which you usually lose, but you get to have a negotiation. In this situation, the notes, I didn't understand the notes by and large, and there was no negotiation.
Right. Then there's no real studio person at this point because it's now in the hands of Franchise Films, and that's not a conventional film company.
The people I talked to was John Travolta and Jonathan Crane, who was his producing partner.
Right.
So they basically wanted their vision.
So what do you do?
I write their vision to the best of my ability. It was the hardest thing I've ever written. It's pretty bad when the writer doesn't always understand what's going on. I was facts
overpaid. Did you think about quitting?
I did not think about quitting because I'm not that smart. Somehow in the back of my head, I figured this isn't going to be the movie I wanted it to be, but it still might not be terrible. I think I have a great capacity for self-delusion.
And you say you were fax pages.
I was fax pages that Kelly Preston had written, John's wife, because she was going to be in it. And it was just a nightmare situation. I turned in the draft. It was the best I could do in a bad situation. And that was basically the end of my tour of duty. I saw the movie once at the premiere. I certainly recognized some of the stuff I wrote, and then there's a lot of stuff that I didn't recognize. And the stuff that I did recognize seemed, you know, oddly changed.
What percentage of the movie at this point feels like it could have sort of been yours?
You know, I'd like to say less than 1%, but I don't think that's true. I only saw the movie once, and all I could think of the entire time is, what am I going to do for a career now? You know, there's no executive in town who's going to go, hey, let's get Corey Mandel. You know, maybe you can work some of that Battlefield Earth magic on this project. I'm thinking it's over. I had some projects that almost got made, but the project that got made is mind-numbingly terrible. Yeah, I'm convinced it's over.
So was it?
Shockingly, no. My agent, Jason Spitz, who's just an amazing agent, talked me off the ledge. And he said, look, your body of work speaks for itself. People will understand that this was a terrible career choice that you made, but it's not representative of who you are as a writer. You'll continue to work. And I worked nonstop till the writer's strike. I did a project for Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's company, Aftermath, that almost got made.
You're the king of the almost got made movie. Yeah.
I worked on Thunderbirds with Working Title. I did 16 studio projects, and almost none of them got made.
So this hardly destroyed your career. Your agent was right.
Yeah, I was shocked.
And Do you think it hurt you at all?
I think it was very humiliating personally, but I don't.
So as an instructor, do you pass along the lessons of Battlefield Earth?
You know, it's funny. My wife, Rebecca, who's much smarter than me, said, Battlefield Earth made you the teacher that you are. Before that project, I was very stubborn and very cocky, and that project really humbled me. It was humiliating. And when I was hired out of film school by Ridley Scott to write Metropolis, and it was reported that he was going to make it, Barbara Dreyfus, who's an agent at ICM, took me to lunch. And she said, you're on the radar now, and people are going to offer you a lot of money to write something that you don't want to write. You have to say no. You have to keep saying no and find the project that you would write even if you weren't getting paid. You have to find the project you're passionate about because you have a choice right now, Corey. Do you want to go down a road of getting a lot of studio writing jobs or do you want to become an A-list writer? And I knew that what she was saying was really important and really true. And I was offered a bunch of projects for a lot of money that I didn't want to write. And there was one project in particular where they kept, when you say no, they want you more and more. And they kept raising the price. For the Ridley Scott project, I got paid $60,000, and they offered me $350,000.
Wow.
That was a fortune to me. I don't come from money. That was a fortune. And I said yes, and I took that project. And that put me on a road of just doing it for the money and just taking projects for the money. And so I tell my students about that, and I say, first of all, if you do that, you're going to end up with a Battlefield Earth. And secondly, what I tell them is it's so important early on before you get paid to write a bunch of scripts that you love. So that way, when the day comes when someone offers you a lot of money to write something that you don't want to write, you can say yes and not lose your soul. I think if you say yes to that without really ever writing a passion project, you're in trouble. And that's the lesson that I would pass on from Battlefield Earth.
Corey Mandel is one of two credited writers on the famed 2000 film Battlefield Earth. He's currently a screenwriting consultant and a screenwriting instructor at UCLA. And thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holtzman is the executive producer of the show. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or thoughts about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with the click of a button from our media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.